Hello, I'm Dr. Neil Skolnick. On behalf of CME Outfitters, I'd like to welcome and thank you for joining us for episode 3 of our 3-part REMS CMEO cast series, available to you on both webinar and podcast. Today's activity is part of a series of risk evaluation and management strategies, or REMS education, covering the FDA blueprint. Opioid Analgesic REMS Education Blueprint for healthcare providers involved in the treatment and monitoring of patients with pain. REMS compliant education is a critical component of the ER and LA Opioid Analgesic REMS program to provide education to clinicians on safe opioid practices, as well as current regulations and guidelines on treating pain and prescribing opioids appropriately. To meet the requirement for REMS, at the end of the activity, complete the post-test and evaluation to receive your CME and CE credits. CME Outfitters will submit your completed information to the FDA. It's that easy. Watch your email for additional REMS compliant education from CME Outfitters. Again, I'm Neil Skolnick. I'm a professor of family and community medicine at the Sidney Kimmel Medical College of Thomas Jefferson University and Associate Director of the Family Medicine Residency Program at Abington Jefferson Health. Our first learning objective for today is to recognize risk factors for overdose in patients with chronic opioid use and in those patients who are on high-dose opioids for their chronic pain. Our second objective, we're going to talk about some strategies you can use to open a non-stigmatizing discussion with patients and to educate them about the risk of overdose as well as the role of naloxone in preventing tragic outcomes from overdoses. When we think about naloxone, obviously naloxone is not a cure for opioid overdose, but it's a temporizing measure that can be life-saving. And it's so important, in fact, that it's considered one of the 5 strategies to prevent overdose deaths that's discussed in the government regulations and recommendations for preventing opioid deaths. It is one of the few things that actually all 50 states agree as being of critical importance and therefore have implemented legislations in the vast majority of states to allow patients to walk into a pharmacy and get naloxone prescriptions. In the state of Pennsylvania, where I am at, for instance, the state Department of Health actually has given all pharmacists standing prescriptions that can be utilized without a patient's primary care physician having to give them a prescription. So a patient, or equally important or more important, a patient's family member can walk into any pharmacy and obtain a prescription for naloxone. The type of naloxone, and we'll talk about types in a minute, that they will get will be determined by their insurance, but they can leave that pharmacy with that prescription filled. Recognize there are also Good Samaritan laws that protect bystanders who, with the best of intentions, see someone who they believe is having an opioid overdose and use naloxone to help them. There are 3 FDA-approved formulations of naloxone. There's an injectable formulation, and that's the needle with syringe. There is a vial. The vial has to be shaken, the needle put into the vial, drawn up, and then given. There's a pre-filled auto-injector, similar to an EpiPen, and there's a prepackaged nasal spray. Of these, clearly the nasal spray is the easiest to use. Next easiest is the auto-injector. And actually fairly difficult is the full injectable. When they've done person analysis in other areas of use of pulling out medicines from vials and giving it compared to nasal sprays. In those analyses, many family members of a patient in distress are unable to administer medicines out of vials. So if they're available, the nasal spray or auto-injector is certainly preferable. But if they are not, depending on a patient's insurance, any of the three are excellent options. It's important for patients, and again, even more importantly, their family members, to ahead of time learn how to use this. I think while there are resources available both through CME Alpheters as well as through the government site toolkit, I think the easiest thing, what I recommend to patients, is they go on YouTube, and depending on the specific type of medicine that they obtained at their pharmacy, they can look up YouTube videos, which are the easiest way to see someone walk you through how to use the type of medicine that you got, and look at that a few times and even discuss it with someone in your family, how it's going to use. So at the point of time when you need to act, you have that knowledge already available, and you can implement it, because you don't want to learn how to use it for the first time when it's needed. Naloxone saves lives, but it only saves lives if it's available. And if we look between 2017 and 18, actually overdose deaths have declined. Over the same period of time, the number of naloxone prescriptions dispensed have doubled. So this is a wonderful example of the effects of medical education. At the same time, it's also a very good example of opportunity for growth, because only one naloxone prescription is dispensed for every 70 high-dose opioid prescription out there. So we've done great in our improvement over the last year, and it's important to remember when we're seeing patients that we still have room for improvement. Prescriptions for naloxone are less in rural areas than they are in metropolitan areas. But again, the key thing here, it's simple, it's direct. For patients who are at risk for overdose related to opioids, remember to give them a prescription or to advise them and document in the chart to get a naloxone prescription filled at their pharmacy. What are some things that put individuals at higher risk? One, history of substance abuse, including prescription and illicit drugs and alcohol. Two, comorbid psychiatric and medical disorders. High dose opioids at a dose greater than 50 milligram equivalents of morphine a day. Co-prescription of opioids and benzos. This is one where I really want to pause for a minute, because some of the others that we talk about, we're not in control of in our office, but the co-prescription of opioids and benzodiazepine medicines is something that we clearly are in control of. Whether that is being given directly from our office or by different prescribers, which we can find when we go on the prescription drug monitoring site for our individual states, it's something to be aware of. And while we acknowledge that some people might need both prescriptions because they really are suffering from difficult psychiatric problems in addition to pain problems, if there's a way to taper off either the benzodiazepine or the opioid analgesic so that we're not using both together, that's certainly preferable from a safety point of view. Other indicators of risk is polysubstance use, recent release from prison or an abstinence-based program, obstructive sleep apnea, and cardiovascular complications or multiple comorbidities. There's clearly a heightened risk of overdose in patients who also have concomitant alcohol problems or who are also taking benzodiazepines. And that's because both of these increase the respiratory depression that occurs also with opioid analgesics. From 1999 to 2017, almost 400,000 poisoning deaths involved opioids. Alcohol involvement increased over this period of time. Benzodiazepine involvement, the reason why I mention this is because it increased from 1999 to account for almost 9% of deaths involving opioids to involving over 20% of those deaths. So this really is an important area of focus for all of us. Now, how do we approach this with our patient? I think the key is non-judgmental, because the only true approach in life is a non-judgmental one. None of us are perfect. All of us do things that are not perfect, have done things wrong in the past. When we acknowledge that, we can begin to bridge that gulf that otherwise might be there between us and our patient, so that we don't want to be judgmental. We don't want to stigmatize the use of medicines, but rather we want to create a partnership between us and our patients. Different terms on this slide, and I think we all put this in our own words. Let's discuss the risk involved in opioid use, where you're taking sedating drugs in addition to your opioids for pain, and that may affect your body's response and may affect your breathing. However you choose to use it in words, what's important, and really what I do is I'll often at a visit where I'm not feeling rushed, one of those visits where I'm not running four patients behind, decide that that's a good time to discuss either opioid tapering, or if a patient's on opioids and benzodiazepines, how we might approach creating a safer environment, a safer medicine environment for our patients. And then listening, because again, patients have lots of concerns in this area. Signs of overdose, I don't think, are particularly tricky. They are listed on this slide: unresponsive pinpoint pupils, blue or pale skin, a slow heartbeat, irregular breathing, choking, vomiting, fainting. I think these are things that are most important for patients' families to recognize. And again, I've found that the best way to, the most engaging way for patients' families to learn about this is often now through YouTube, which people are accustomed to looking at, and where there's lots of choices of what you can look for and listen to in a comfortable manner, in a comfortable environment. How do you use naloxone? Again, I think more effective than one-time education in the office is referring patients to resources. There are resources available on the CME Alpheter's website. And depending on which form you're using, the drop from the vial injectable, an auto injectable, a nasal spray, will determine the way that we want to teach patients, and patients need to learn with regard to how to use their naloxone prescription. Ultimately, we want to have some clear goals that we discuss in partnership with our patient. And those goals are medicine safety and treatment of their pain, with attention to function, with attention to improving the domains of function, both their personal life, how they're feeling, how they're getting along with others in their family, and how they're doing at work. Having a clear plan for pain management that involves not just medicines, but also often a therapist helping with a CBT-based approach to achieving help our patients achieve those goals, also helping our patients address what are often concomitant mental health comorbidities. Exercise and alternative approaches such as meditation, hypnosis, acupuncture, exercise, and creating that partnership with a patient to determine when is the appropriate time for opioid tapering, if they are at high risk of opioid overdose, to make sure that they and family members have a prescription for naloxone and are aware of resources so that they can ahead of time look at how to use naloxone if it's needed. I want to thank you for joining us today for episode 3 of our 3-part REMS CMEO cast series, available through webinar and podcast. To view additional episodes on pain management, please visit cmealpheters.com. Please also visit the Opioid Education Hub. You'll find other REMS activities, as well as a broad range of educational activities and resources for healthcare providers and patients. As a reminder, to meet the requirements for REMS, please complete the post-test and evaluation to receive your CME or CE credits. CME outfitters will submit your completed information to the FDA. We hope you'll be able to integrate these plans, these assessment and management strategies into your clinical practice. I'm Dr. Neil Skolnick, and I thank you for listening.